Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, November 7th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 15 minutes or so, as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to be with me for this Tuesday edition of the show. It's a full broadcast with Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas. Tons and tons and tons of college football stuff coming your way here on today's show. Of course, Kyle Hunter couldn't join us on Monday for our college football first look. We'll make up for it here with a lot of stuff with Sports Cheetah about week 11 and beyond. Before we get to that, a few reminders of the stuff going on over at bangthebook.com right now. I put up my college football and NFL opening line reports on Monday, so those are up over there for you to check out, see what the opening lines were, and also what some of the initial line moves were for some of the games here coming up this week. Also, I put up my college football power ratings yesterday, talked a little bit about those. Some games that I like from a power ratings, pure power ratings standpoint, and then also some of the adjustments that I made here as we head on into week 11. Bunch of game previews going up over there. We've got Alan Moody's conference by conference college basketball power ratings. Those are a very exciting addition to our site here. Also, Parker Michaels' NHL picks. I'll have some golf stuff coming out this week. NASCAR coming up here for this week as well. UFC, whatever the case may be, we've got you covered over at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Finally, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, sign up using that promo code BTB and the number 25, you'll get a $25 free bet just for signing up. So you can test out the site, see how you like it. If you decide to deposit over there, you'll get a 100% deposit match bonus for the Sportsbook and a 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. I talked about this on Monday's show. In the month of November, with so many games going on, it is imperative to be able to shop around for the best lines that are out there, those half points and full points in college basketball, college football, the NBA, whatever the case may be. Shop around for the best prices. If you don't have an account at DSI, give it a try with that BTB25 promo code. One guest for today's edition of Bang the Book Radio, that is the great Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas. A long list of topics here, and then also touched on a bunch of games and wrap things up with a listener question. So without further ado, here is this week's Hunting for Winners segment with Sports Cheetah. All right, I'm joined now by Sports Cheetah for this week's Hunting for Winners segment. Preston, how's it going today, man?
Going well. Things are good. Getting ready for, I guess it's week 11 now for college football.
Isn't that crazy? It's already week 11. I mean, there's like, what, three weeks left of the regular season, and then I guess, what, Sun Belt plays that first week of December, but then it's conference championships and then bowl season, and obviously, as everybody knows, bowl season is just a totally different animal, so we'll have a lot of good stuff to talk about here over the next 4, 5, 6 weeks.
There definitely is through, yeah, I mean, bowl games go essentially like a month straight where you're going to have games every week, so it's a good time. It's fun. One of the best, I think, to have discussions on comparing teams, and obviously from different schedules, different conferences, varying records and efficiency stats, and trying to break it down to where we can find an edge. And then there's all the extra stuff with coaches in and out and certain players playing or not. And it's a good time. And there's so many bowl games now. Some people hate it. I actually think it's fine. It just means there's more games to bet or more opportunity to hopefully make money.
I agree. I don't think there are too many bowl games. I think if you get to 6 wins and these kids can get a chance to have a couple more weeks of practice, see a part of the country they wouldn't see, you know, get that swag bag of stuff that all the sponsors give out, good for them. I mean, it's one of the few things, honestly, in college athletics that genuinely seems to be about the athletes, is that, you know, these guys get to play that extra game if they've earned the right with 6 wins. And you know, I think that there should probably be even more bowl games, even if they're not going to be great to watch, and most of the early ones aren't. You know, hey, at least these kids get to keep playing. And for some of these kids, for a lot of these kids, it'll be their last college football game. So why would you want to take that away from anybody?
Yeah, and that's one of the things you're handicapping, not only before the bowl games, maybe late in the year too. You know, and teams that are, say, starting, you know, 12, 15, maybe even more seniors on a team, and I guess, you know, just how much more it means to those kids versus maybe a younger team that will have the opportunity going forward to get it back, you know, or get back to a bowl game or potentially further. So it's a good way to, I think, not only give them, I think they get an extra few weeks of practice on top of it, which is good, you know, just going into the next season with everybody having, you know, more time to just not only practice and prep for a game, but just play football and experience that, you know, which for some teams, a few that we've already seen in recent years, like SMU and Virginia, off the top of my head, are going to be going bowling for the first time in a few seasons. So first time for any of these kids. And it's, you know, it's positive for the school, the university, everything. And, you know, it's all, again, it comes back to for us, more chances to bet on them or make some money. So I'm all for it. I mean, as many 5-win teams as want to get a bowl, I think it's cool.
Well, that's actually the first topic that I wanted to talk about with you here today is when you start factoring in bowl eligibility as a handicapping tool. Because one of the things that I think about is, you know, once you get into that final week of the season on Thanksgiving weekend, or if it's a Sun Belt team fighting for bowl eligibility, you know, playing that conference championship Saturday, you know, at that point, you're paying a premium. When a team's down to its last game and they have 5 wins, you're paying a premium on that team. So are you looking at the standings now and sort of looking at some of these teams and saying, okay, well, they've got 4 wins. You know, they're playing 2 very winnable games where they'll be a favorite. They're playing 1 game against an elite team in their division, so they'll probably get beaten. Is that something you start looking at here at this stage of the game?
Yeah, you have to. I feel like especially this last week, I was really looking at teams that have, you know, 4 losses or so. I think there was a good one was Kansas State, Texas Tech, and I was trying for the life of me. I didn't bet the game, but I own a Texas Tech in this like stock market type league as a sell team. I sold them earlier in the season, so basically I'm down on Texas Tech. And they had lost 4 of their last 6 or something like that since I had sold it, and or maybe it was 4 of the last 5. And anyway, I could lock in a profit, or I was trying to figure out, you know, should I just let it ride because they play Kansas State, which they're favorites in that game. But it's close to about a coin flip, I think. But they just have home field. Then they play Baylor. But then after that, they have to play TCU and Texas, which are probably losses. So I'm trying to gauge everything. And I really dove into that game, and there was nothing there. It was that both teams basically had to win that game for a real legitimate shot at a bowl game. They obviously, neither one was coming off of a crazy win or loss that was like a letdown, weird spot. Like everything just matched up perfectly. And then sure enough, it went into overtime. It was basically a dead even game the whole way. But that was something I was really digging at when I was, you know, handicapping every game. You really need to, you know, check. Like for some teams, I guess it was the Tulsa SMU game. I know SMU got steamed and didn't end up covering, but that was one where they basically needed to beat Tulsa in order to get to a bowl game this year. And sure enough, they have, because I think their last 3 games of the year, the UCF won just this last week, and even their next couple are pretty tough. They're not guaranteed. So that Tulsa one at home was for a bowl game, and that was big. And then Virginia's in the same bowl. I actually backed Virginia, not necessarily because they're playing for a bowl win, more so that Bronco had a few years of experience defending the Georgia Tech option when he was at BYU. And then on top of that, they played Air Force at the Mountain West Conference a lot. So I just kind of like the matchup from this coaching aspect. But when it came down to it, I bet Virginia for partly that reason, where they, I think, have to play Virginia Tech, Miami. And it's 3 tough games where they're going to be underdogs. And so this was their shot last Saturday for a bowl game probably. And so, yeah, you definitely have to dive into, you know, trying to – you expect the best from every team, but these are still kids. They play, you know, weirdly good and weirdly bad week to week. And, if there's ever a time where you can expect them to be max focused, max, you know, motivation, I think there is some sort of quantifiable, like, number to that as far as, you know, maybe a point spread goes. And that was one I think that was 10 and came down and closed around 7.5. So people were betting Virginia, and whether it was just a numbers thing or – because of the spot, because of a potential bowl bid for the program, everything kind of culminated into that being a good side. So you got to do that with every single game. Make sure you know where the teams are at these last few weeks as the season winds down.
And I think we got a couple of examples of that here for this week, and we're going to touch on a wide range of games. Some of them we'll do here during the topics. Others we'll go a little bit more in depth on. But game 123-124 on Friday night, BYU takes on UNLV, and BYU's taken out a little bit of money here the last couple of weeks, and they've covered both of those numbers. But for UNLV here, you know, when they lost that game to Howard in week 1, you're kind of sitting there looking at the Rebels and saying, okay, where do we find 6 wins? You know, and then they go on the road, blow out Idaho. I think they were, what, like a double-digit dog in that game or something. There was some crazy line move. I think the opener was like a double-digit dog, and then it came down a little bit. They get the win over San Jose State. Surprising win as a 3-touchdown dog over Fresno. Beat Hawaii last week. Well, now for the Rebels, they're sitting here with four wins, chance to make their second bowl game since 2000, and they've got BYU here. And this is a BYU team that's not going to make it into a bowl, and that's really not the expectations for that program. So you know, does that put a bye sign in front of UNLV here this week with New Mexico and Nevada both on the road to end the year?
You know, I'm really interested. I haven't looked since Saturday. I stay away from college football news on Sundays because I am so focused all day Saturday. I usually have headaches by the night. Tanner Mangum, there's a late game. I think it looked like an Achilles injury. He might be out for the year. I mean, that's massive on top of the fact that BYU is just, you know, crashing and burning. They had to win that Fresno State game, which they ended up losing by 7. They had a couple drives to try to tie it, go to overtime. They would have needed to win that and then their next three, which are all winnable, to get to a bowl, and they didn't. So, yeah, they're dead now, especially for a 13-game schedule. If they went 5-8, I don't think they're getting in versus a team that went 5-7. So they're about 100% out of it, and their starting quarterback, I'm pretty sure they're going to just be resting if he isn't completely injured, but it looked bad and have to get an update on that. But he could be out for the rest of the season on top of it. So for me, it would definitely just be a bye on UNLV or nothing. It's funny that Howard and Fresno State, those two games are essentially a wash where they won one as over a three-touchdown dog and lost one as over a three-touchdown favorite. And they essentially are now sitting in a spot where they can win two of their last three, and they're not going to be pretty big, you know, dogs on the road at New Mexico or even Nevada, if not maybe a small favorite there. So I think it's doable. I think it's UNLV or nothing at the current four. It did move down from 4.5 to 4. Like you said, BYU's taken the money the last 2 weeks playing inferior, you know, opponents after their first half of the year where they were playing really tough teams. So I wouldn't rush at it. Maybe you get a 3.5 or a 3 if the BYU money does come in again this week.
Yeah, and Tanner Mangum is out for the year, Achilles injury. And obviously, I mean, the quarterbacks at BYU are just cursed. You think about him and Taysom Hill and everything that they've had to go through just to try and stay on the field. And it's been a real challenge for them to be able to do that. And then, you know, you look at this UNLV team, and I think that, you know, and this is something that we've kind of talked about a little bit here throughout the season on the shows, is that when Vegas starts to back UNLV, when you start to see some steam come in on the Rebels in some of these spots, that's really significant because, you know, this team is highly scrutinized out there, and they really haven't been very good for quite some time. I mean, they had the bowl berth a few years ago. I think they played in a bowl game in 2013. But overall, you know, this is a team that really hasn't been very good for quite some time. And when perception starts to change on some of their numbers and some of the sharper guys are backing them, I think that is inherently a buy sign. And then you look now at the situation, they need two wins in their last three games to get into a bowl. I mean, also, too, maybe this is something you know a little bit better than I do, but you talked about Bronco Mendenhall and how he's a veteran coach and what he's been able to do here at Virginia this year. Does the dynamic change for BYU in what is now a lost season, not having a guy like Mendenhall as the head coach?
You know, I will say that the one thing that would worry me about backing UNLV is that everyone coaching at BYU right now is coaching for their jobs going forward. They've had such a down year. I imagine Kalani Sitake will get one more chance, but Ty Detmer is probably gone as offensive coordinator regardless. But say they're able to win their last three and get something going with I think it'll be Hodge at quarterback now, who actually got injured as a backup against Utah State up until this last week. He was out with concussion stuff. So he's had issues himself. So who knows, they could be down to their third, fourth string quarterbacks again like they were earlier in the year. It's just a mess. But I will say that coaches aren't going to be taking, you know, the month off now that they're not making a bowl. A lot of them are at risk to be fired. I imagine you're going to get max effort from that regard. Now, whether the players execute, they haven't really executed very well all season. So I think you're not getting an extra bonus there just because, you know, I imagine these guys, and Kalani Sitake, Ty Detmer, I mean, their first time head coach, first time offensive coordinator, and this is their first real go at it, and now two seasons in, hasn't really gone well. I think they know they need to coach the rest of the year off as they would any other game, any other week, at the very least to get, you know, some sort of positive confidence going to the AD or whoever it is that ends up making the decisions on who stays or goes. And it could even just be a matter of Sitake trying to gain more trust in Detmer going forward. But my guess is that he's gone regardless, like I mentioned before. But either way, I think they're going to be coached and preparing and organized and practices. Everything will be pretty high strung, just like they would have been any other week this year.
All right, there's one other game I want to touch on here then from a bowl eligibility standpoint, and this one's a little bit more obvious because when we talk about UNLV, even if they win this week, they still may not make it to a bowl. They've got to win two of their last three. This other team does not, and this team down in the Sun Belt, Georgia State. Georgia State with first-year head coach Sean Elliott, who got the interim job after Steve Spurrier quit the Gamecocks program, largely because he was a fiery, upbeat type of dude. I think he was the offensive line coach at South Carolina. And then he winds up getting this job at Georgia State. You're kind of wondering about that hire. You know, he was largely a position coach, didn't really have any coordinator experience, anything like that. But then gets this job at Georgia State. Well, Georgia State's 5-3 here. They've got three games left at Texas State this week, Appalachian State off a bye on November 25th. Then they host Idaho December 2nd. We'll see if Matt Linehan's going to be able to play that one for Idaho because that would have a significant impact on the line for that game. But Georgia State here, you know, they made it to a bowl game in 2015. This is only their fifth year, I think, as an FBS member. So they've already made it to a bowl, so kudos to them for that. But they've got a shot here, and they're a 5.5-point road favorite. Now, unlike the UNLV spot, I sort of feel like maybe the bowl eligibility factor is priced a little bit more into this game because my power ratings have it 4.
Yeah, that definitely could be here. I mean, Texas State isn't very good. So they definitely deserve to be the favorite. I have it a little lower as well. I was just pulling it up. I have it at 5, and it's 5.5. For me, though, I have to give them credit just for the sake of being in this position. They lost to Tennessee State, their FCS opponent, to start the year. Then they followed it up losing 56-0 against Penn State. Then they follow that up with a road win at Charlotte 28-0, and you're like, wow, okay. I mean, Charlotte isn't very good, but they got a win on the, you know, the belt loop or whatever, a notch in their belt. In Memphis, game was canceled, which, by the way, this is going to probably play a factor for deciding on five or whatever when teams making the bottom end bowls, when there's a team like Georgia State who, granted, would have lost to Memphis, but when they only played 11 games and they won 5 rather than a team that's 5-7, they might get the nod. So even at 5-3, this could be a bowl team already. They've beaten the teams that they're supposed to, or at least were around, you know, lined, you know, within a touchdown, like at Coastal Carolina, they win that game. They beat UL Monroe on the road. Then they play Troy, they lose by 24, which kind of makes sense. They beat South Alabama, and then they won at Georgia Southern in a game. I think Georgia Southern, if they wanted to get a win this season, that was their last chance, and they still won in that spot. So they beat these teams where they were either small favorites, small dogs, and then they lost to, you know, Penn State and Troy, and Memphis game was canceled. But I think that actually bodes well. Like, people talk a lot about good coaches who are good in the underdog role at covering or this and that. Like, honestly, I think a good coach is someone that wins games they're supposed to or that are about coin flips, and if you lose your game to Troy or Penn State, like, that's okay. You're supposed to lose those games. So they do a good job taking care of business, basically. And so this is one on the road at Texas State, an inferior team, your favorite. They've taken care of business all season long. This gets them to 6 wins. They don't even have to sweat, you know, a 5-6 record potentially getting a bowl at the end of the year. So I like the spot for them. And, you know, the number is maybe slightly inflated, a half point, or for you, like a point and a half now. And you know, I'm not sure I'd be backing them, though. I'm not sure there's enough that I've looked at so far this week that would tell me a matchup between, you know, Texas State, the way Georgia State plays. I'll have to look at, you know, how often they're running, passing versus defensively, and kind of break it down more, which I haven't done yet this week. But from what I see, I'm pretty sure these teams kind of just match up pretty similarly, and I'll probably be passing.
Well, what I wanted to do by introing with that segment in terms of talking about the bowl eligibility factor is that I was going through my power ratings, and I got them done on Monday. Well, actually, I updated them Sunday night, took another look Monday morning, and then posted the article. And one of the things that you and I were talking about before we started recording here is that, at least in my power ratings, based on the numbers that I'm getting, a lot of times the ones that are off from the numbers that are out in the market are on teams that are just really high variance or teams that I just don't know how to rate right now because they're a gigantic mess. So I'm going to ask you this question, Preston, is do you feel like power ratings become less significant in November? You've got the college football playoff rankings noise, bowl eligibility, motivations change, all that type of stuff. Do you feel like your power ratings just carry a little bit less value?
I think there's some truth to that to an extent. I'm not sure if it's just because it's, you know, a lot of the high variance stuff, or we're talking about teams with motivation and bowl, this and that. I think part of the reason
that they lose some of their muster would just be because it is week 11 and now odds makers and people setting lines and people betting into them too just have a, you know, there's similarities now through everyone's numbers where there isn't as much of a discrepancy as you would have seen in week one or week two or even a week five or six. So the numbers are just tighter in general from the get-go, and people betting into them, you know, they're not really moving games as far either direction with their opinion, which could be wrong earlier in the season, or you're betting back against some steam sometimes. So I think that's part of it. And then, you know, I'd say part of it also, when I mean, this is the case, I think, just every week, something to an extent, you know, beating a move or being on, I would say, beating a move or getting a really good number, which early in the week, early in the season, earlier in the week, you're getting, you know, some really big moves like 6 to 7, 8, sometimes more points, especially in total. That's important because you're trying to gain every edge of possibility. But there's a lot of times, I think, throughout the season, and it's especially be the case when there's a lot of these weird situational extra stuff going on later in the year, where it's just more important to be on the right side rather than worrying about betting it on Sunday night or Monday and hopefully getting a good number. And, you know, if you bet a -8 because you think it's short and your number's 11, and then you really break it down all week and it doesn't feel like it's the right side, you know, you're stuck having a -8, where if you waited, you break down things, you know, as the week goes, you really dig into the games, at least if that's what you're doing. Hopefully you're doing that if you're listening and betting on your own. But, you know, I'll have every year a couple times where I get into a game Wednesday or Thursday and I want to play back on the other side because I don't like it anymore. So later in the season, I imagine there'll be a lot of that too, where your power numbers and power ratings were early in the year, you're probably just firing at, you know, big discrepancies left and right. And now you're a little more cautious because there's a lot more to dig into and a lot more data to be had just from past games on the season, where you just want to make sure you're on the right side. Let's say you passed on the -8 and it's -9.5 or -10, you know, but you still like it then come Wednesday or Thursday. You're like, oh, man, I could have had -8. But I feel like if it's the right side, that's going to still be covering often enough that you're good rather than hating that you bet -8 and having to play back on the other side or something. So I think that kind of all culminates into why power ratings maybe, you know, hold a little bit of a lesser value later in the season.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think another part of it, too, is that, you know, like you talked about, you're trying to get in front of these numbers early on in the season, and you've done all of that preseason prep work. You've done all that study. You feel really confident in your numbers. And then as the season goes along, you know, you're adjusting against the close, which is, I mean, adjusting on the fly, everything's an inexact science with this, but it feels like adjusting on the fly is a little bit more inexact than having all of this preseason information out in front of you, where, you know, early on in weeks 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, you have these positions that you wanted to take and you're going to stick to them. But as the season goes along, you've got variable performances, you've got injuries you have to try and account for and try to quantify. I just feel like, you know, you would think that power ratings get more efficient as the season goes along with more data points, but in some respects, they also get less efficient just because, you know, you have these teams where, like the things that we talked about already, different motivations, interim coaches, coaches that are lame ducks. You know, you have more things that you probably can't account for in a numerical sense.
Yeah, I think there's absolutely the, like I say, like extra variables, and that's going to be the case all year long. But think of it as like if you had a graph, you know, as the season goes along, it just kind of slowly trends up where those extra variables just are more and probably weighted more heavily too later in the year versus the beginning. You know, week one or week two, you kind of know what you're getting and you're going into the season with your numbers. And then injuries start happening, or, you know, you two bad or three bad losses, and now a team's in a weird spot where the coach has rumors of getting fired. And, I mean, there's just all the other stuff, all the extra noise, and that just gets more pronounced as the season goes on. So I absolutely agree. I think, you know, the power numbers are good to obviously have a base and at least have an idea where a number should be. But if it's off, like, make sure you look and try to figure out why before you fire away at a game.
Now, I'm sure you're still going down to the win and hitting the openers on Sunday, but we just kind of talked about it a little bit where, you know, maybe the power ratings, maybe the numbers guys feel like they don't have as much of an edge here at this time of the year. So do you feel like we may see a change in the timing of line moves here as we go forward, because a lot of times you get those initial hits, and sometimes they're pretty significant on Sunday when the Bet Online openers pop, or win, or when Chris opens up their numbers as well. We see that wave of line moves. Do you feel like maybe those won't be as pronounced here as we go forward?
I don't know if that's the case. Most of the people that are betting, there's the Sunday moves, which are just basically everyone kind of taking a shot that does, betting their numbers on openers. The limits aren't huge, but people will still take their shots. Monday, you'll see some moves from a particular person that releases Mondays that still influences the market. Tuesday and Wednesday, you'll see influence from another group that releases stuff then. Then limits really open up like Thursdays and Fridays, and then obviously Saturday too. So you'll see some more movement right before games, especially Friday, you'll see a lot, and then the day of the game as well. So I'm not sure we're going to see less of that, to be completely honest. I know yesterday things didn't move a ton, so I think that's where you're correct in that a lot of the individuals out there betting numbers and betting, the $1,000 or $2,000 limits you have on an opener on a Sunday, they're not betting as near the volume or at the win. People are maybe betting 1, 2, 3 games rather than earlier this year people were betting 8, 10 games at the win. They're just sharper, tighter lines now. So I think that'll be the case. But the groups that are releasing that influence the market, they're not, unless they take the week off. I mean, they're still going to be influencing the market. So I think you'll still see some moves. The Florida State people, or just anyone that's betting Florida State, I mean, that already moved today to 17.5. It's down to 16. So that's an example of people that are just back to Florida State again. They're on the road at Clemson. So there's been some games that have moved today. And I imagine if I asked around to figure out who it was or whatever, it would be the person that does release Monday. So I think there's some of the same people will still be influencing the market, whether it's week 11, week 1, week 14. It's all going to be the same after, I think, the initial kind of onslaught of bets on Sunday.
All right, so now that we're into the month of November, and, of course, as we get into December with some of these games as well, and this is probably more of an impact in the NFL when it comes to December and then that first week there, or that last week of the regular season in January, but weather will become even more of a factor. It's getting colder. It's getting windier. Lots more rain and snow throughout the country. So I think it's a good time to start talking about that a little bit more here. And, Chino, when it comes to weather handicapping, when do you start to take those forecasts seriously?
Week 1. I mean, you have to do it all year long, especially this season. It's so much water and the hurricane stuff and wind. And so you're really looking at it before you're firing at a total. And everyone, I mean, still there's weird storms that happen. You fire on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and, you'll have a move against you, or you'll have weather that goes against you come the game or kickoff on a Saturday. But I won one, for example, with the Duke Virginia Tech game recently. I didn't bet the total, but I bet the side, and wasn't too concerned about the weather, but it got so bad that in Virginia Tech had an edge in the trenches. It ended up being a close game and almost a cover for Duke anyways, but it was one of those where Duke really couldn't do much, only got 3 points because they were playing in essentially a massive storm. It looked like a hurricane when you're watching it on the screen. So you have to just be following it all the time. And it is getting colder. There is going to be more wind, maybe more snow even. I think the Wyoming game against Colorado State, there was snow. And it's going to happen some places. I will say this, when it comes down to, actually handicapping, I think rain's not overrated. It's maybe people take into account too much. It's ultimately the wind, I think, that plays a bigger deal when you're looking at weather. And, cold can affect some people, and especially from schools that aren't used to playing in the cold. But when it's really windy, that essentially takes out a huge aspect of the game called football. You either pass or run the ball. You can still run in the wind. You can still block in the wind. You can't really throw a ball very effectively in the wind once it starts hitting, a pretty significant mile per hour. I would say anything like 15 plus, you really have to consider, okay, is this team a running team? Are they effective on the ground? If so, and they're going up against a team that likes to pass, all right, this running team might have a really big advantage here. And at the very least, you can at least assume that when the team passing passes, let's say they do convert and they are pretty efficient despite the wind, they're probably going to go into the game anyways thinking we need to run the ball and pass less because it is really windy. So I think, that's probably the biggest deal when you're handicapping weather, more so than rain and just unders, because that just seems to be
always what everyone bets. I would look more so at the wind and how it affects the team's actual game planning and what they like to do, what their strengths and weaknesses are, and then how that will affect that particular matchup or game.
All right, so what about on a week-by-week basis here? I mean, how far out are you looking at the weather and starting to take it seriously? Is it Tuesday? Is it Wednesday? Do you have a certain, 72, 48 hours? Do you have a certain period of time in which you start looking at this and saying, okay, there's a reasonable level of certainty here that the weather is going to be this? Do you kind of have a deadline on that?
Yeah, I mean, I bet totals earlier in the week, and sometimes, you're going to get hit with some random storm that comes in like once a year maybe, and when it comes down to it, I'm just checking when I'm betting stuff on a Tuesday or Wednesday, because weather reports or forecasts are, they go, as far in advance as you want in, Friday or Sunday or Thursday games. And it's usually pretty close enough where they're going to be correct, so you can be confident that the weather forecast is good. So I'm looking at it whenever I bet a total generally, or if there is like a storm that's well known, and I'm betting a side even. I want to make sure my side still makes sense if it is going to be windy or there's going to be a bunch of rain. So I'm doing it, essentially before I bet any game. I think you just need to do that all year long and just kind of like a quick check, make sure everything, as far as what you – we talk about the things we can't control when we handicap, and there's a lot of them. Weather would be one of them, so at least the one thing you can control is making sure you're aware of what the weather will be when they play the game and making your decision based on that. So I would just – make it a habit if you're betting your own games, even if they're earlier in the week, just take a look, make sure things look as you would expect them to be weather-wise, and then go from there.
All right, so let's talk about coaching here, because in the month of November, this becomes very significant. You have a pretty good idea by this point of who's going to keep their job, who's not going to keep their job. We've already seen that it looks like Kevin Sumlin's going to be out at Texas A&M. We've got several jobs in the SEC available, Florida, Tennessee, possibly Arkansas after that showing against Coastal Carolina, although the writing may have already been on the wall with that one to begin with. But you've got some pretty premier jobs opening up. You've got some other jobs opening up. And then, of course, another part of it, and we talked about this a little bit last week when we sort of discussed Tom Herman and the way that he took the Texas job and how, there are some guys like Scott Frost who are going to be very highly sought after commodities. When it comes to the coaching element of it, how do you handle that? I mean, let's say, looking at last week, for example, where, Jim McElwain gets fired, Randy Shannon's the interim head coach at Florida. Florida goes on the road to Missouri and gets absolutely blasted. And that's going to happen. You're going to see games like that. Ole Miss, over the last couple of weeks, they've played pretty hard for their interim head coach, who's not going to keep the job. So is it just a case-by-case basis thing? And do you feel like you can get a decent pulse for that?
Yeah, it's definitely case by case, and I generally just stay away because it's a lot of guesswork. Unfortunately, I stayed away from betting against all the move on Florida. So I bet Missouri two weeks in a row against Idaho and Connecticut, and their offense is just grooving. And I was like, they're going to – at home, I really wanted to bet them against Florida, but I didn't know how to react to the McElwain stuff. And you've seen teams that react really positively, like even a few weeks before when Gary Anderson – left Oregon State, they covered their next two games, almost won both of them. They almost beat Stanford as sizable dogs at home, ended up losing essentially at the buzzer by one. And so you see it being a positive when the head coach leaves. In this case, it looks like they're just in a complete mess and a disaster. So it's really hard to know, unless you like have people from the inside telling you, oh, the kids, the players are stoked to play for, interim coach so-and-so, or things are going crazy. No one can even get practices organized correctly. I mean, unless you have some extra information, I just think you generally need to stay away from those spots until you get an idea. And, it didn't take long, maybe, 5 minutes, and it was 14-0 Missouri. So I think people knew pretty quickly where that was headed. That was one where if you had, what it took to bet Missouri live at a number versus where it closed, a lot of people think, for live betting, just kind of a side tidbit here, you want to get a better adjusted number than it would have been before. But there are a lot of times, Missouri was just the right side the whole way. And when they're up 14-0, they're laying 7.5 live. That's a pretty good bet, I think, when it's like a factor like this where Ford is just in a mess and in shambles. And how are they going to respond to letting McElwain go? Oh, okay, it doesn't look very good. And then
playing Missouri live rather than trying to play Florida because they closed, you know, 1-point dogs and you're getting 7.5, which is what most people try to look for. So, anyways, yeah, for me, you have to look at all the coaching stuff and just be aware of it. But I'll tell you, like 9 out of 10 times, I'm probably not betting the game, just especially that first game after there was a coach let go or the rumors really start flurrying about a coach potentially leaving. Like even that game before when Florida played, they tried to say who they played. You may remember off the top of your head, but they were trying to say when the rumors about Matt Lane was like, I think it was on Saturday or even Friday. They were saying, oh, there's nothing here, there's nothing here. It was before they played Georgia. That's what it was. And they ended up losing that game really badly too, like 42-7. And so I think, you know, that those are games I stayed away when I think the market and the bettors are actually backing Florida in both cases. I think Florida against Georgia moved from the 14 down to like an 11, and then, you know, they were getting 3, 3.5 against Missouri and got down to 1. Those are the numbers, guys, I guess, but they're just not, they don't care that who's coaching. And I think that's kind of crazy when it comes down to it. So always be aware, and I think more often than not, like I said, just stay away from the game until you get some sort of reaction, and then you can go from there as you handicap, you know, their next week's game or for the rest of the season.
All right, now let's take a look at this from a different angle from a coaching standpoint, in that you have some relatively new coaches, and of course there was a lot of turnover last year. So you have these coaches that are maybe looking towards the future for their program, maybe sitting down some of the upperclassmen, playing some more of their recruits to see how they fit into the mix. Do you do any sort of deep dive or in-depth analysis with that if you've got maybe a first or second-year coach? Is that a team that you may look to avoid because maybe they're playing some mistake-prone underclassmen, or do you feel like a spot you may want to play on because you know you're going to get an effort from kids trying to prove themselves?
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I think it ultimately comes down to this. The quarterback's worth a lot to a team. There's a couple position players, or say like the center or an offensive lineman, they could be worth like a point or something to a point spread. But when it comes down to it, if you're talking about a linebacker here, one right guard, and you know the third or fourth receiver gets some reps, it's not going to really influence enough where it's significant in the point spread. You know, unless again, now you're going back to, I think you talked about last year when Bronco Mendenhall, bring him up again with Virginia, let the senior actually play the last two games despite having Ben Kirk kind of coming over and being the official guy who's been the quarterback now all season this year. The center, you'd remember his name, Matt Johns, maybe something like that. He was basically going to be gone, and Bronco said, hey, you can have the last two games and you'll play football for the last time in your life. And that's going to make a difference because he's the quarterback, whereas – I think the majority of the time, like that's a very unique situation or instance where majority of time it's nothing I'm really concerned about unless, again, it's the quarterback or maybe, you know, some running back that's a stud is going to be getting less reps for a senior backup or something like that. Maybe it's worth a little bit of value to a point spread. But it's nothing I really consider enough that's going to sway my decision one way or the other.
All right, well, let's break down some of these actual games here. We'll go a little bit more in-depth on some of them coming up this week. And we'll start Wednesday night here with a really, really good one in the MAC. And, in fact, this is one where we've seen a pretty significant line move here early on in the day, this game between Toledo and Ohio. Toledo opened a 6-point favorite. Now it's down to 3.5 or 4 out there in the marketplace. And my number on this game is actually 2, but I'll say this. The reason I didn't hit Ohio early on is because this is one of those spots – like what we talked about last week with Florida Atlantic and Marshall, where Ohio just hasn't seen anybody of Toledo's level all year long. Despite being a really good team, I am worried about that.
You know what? I mean, that definitely is something to worry about. I do not know for the life of me, with Childers, the third-string quarterback for Northern Illinois, playing on the road, why that was bet down to – I didn't release it to anyone because there was like 2 minutes before kick and there was only a -7 at like one place. But I grabbed -7 on Toledo because it was bet down from, it was either 10 or 11. And Northern Illinois just kept taking all the money. And anyway, -7 cashed, but I didn't get that move at all. And there was also a move against Toledo, I think, when they played Ball State. It was a huge number that normally wouldn't matter, but they won by 41, so they covered, and you know, against that move, and now they're getting bet against again. This is another one. My number is 5.5. I actually I'll bet Toledo again if this gets to like three or even under three, especially. I don't know if it will before the game Wednesday. And if it's one of those where it starts moving the day of the game back up, then, you know, I'll end up passing. But there's a couple 3.5s, mostly four and a half. I'm very intrigued. I don't know why people keep betting against the best team in the MAC. I think they're 8-1 now. I'm confused. I actually, you know, I have them as the better team, even though they're on the road. You know, I think I have them 9.5 points better on a neutral. So I think, yeah, 5.5 to 6 is a fair number. And here we are sitting at it coming down from 6.5 to potentially 3.5 and pushing 3. I'll definitely be looking at the Toledo side, and I'm happy to just go against the steam again if that's the case, like last week.
See, what's really interesting about this game is that, you know, we talked about this on last week's show. It was the same scenario for Northern Illinois, where they had played all this great defense. You know, they're one of the top defensive teams in the MAC, but they hadn't played anybody like Toledo. And playing Toledo is not easy because they don't beat themselves. I mean, they're very, very efficient on offense with the football. Well, I think Logan Woodside has 2 interceptions this year, like a 19-2 ratio, something like that. So, I mean, this is a team that moves the football. They do it in chunks, and they don't hurt themselves. And what's different about this game, though, is that Ohio has an offense, and Northern Illinois didn't. So I'm very curious to see what happens here in this game, and I'm very interested to see, you know, where this number does eventually close and if we wind up getting, you know, some sort of sharp split in this game.
You know, I ended up betting Toledo second half and live. So I ended up having like a huge bet on Toledo. So I followed this game a lot more closely than I should have when I actually was at the movie theater with my daughter taking her to a movie. I ended up following it on my phone and watching it on my phone in the movie theater. Luckily we were like the only ones in the movie because it was an early day movie. I think it was a 3 p.m. Kickoff. So anyways, I watched this game closely and I said people will be looking, well, they only beat them 27-10. I hadn't actually seen this before, but Toledo had a 99-yard drive end in 0 points. That's hard to do. They also had another drive that ended in 0 points inside Northern Illinois' red zone. So they had two trips. It could have easily been like a 41-17 game, or even, you know, a couple field goals or at least one touchdown. But they had the one. They had a bad fumble just in the red zone, but they had the one on a huge run where he gets tackled. And then it's one of those where he fumbles it through the end zone, like right before the goal line, kind of a touchback fumble. And that was from a play on the 1 yard line before. So anyways, they definitely outplayed Northern Illinois, like yards per play, everything, like those metrics, you know, more than a 10-point 27-17 win would show. So I wouldn't get too concerned about that if you're like, well, they only scored 27. The Ohio one's weird. I'll tell you, I didn't follow it too closely. I mean, how did they lose so badly to Miami, Ohio? I didn't watch the game. I know it was like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday last week. There was a ton of scoring, and I think, I mean, I know so like there was a ton of points. Maybe it was tied 28-28 at halftime. There was 28-28 in the third quarter, and then I think Miami, Ohio ended up winning or scoring like the last 17 or something like that. But I'm confused as to giving up 45 to Miami, Ohio, and how. You know, yeah, like you're saying, Toledo's offense is going to go nuts against a similar type of defense. Yeah, Ohio can score more, you know, more efficiently than Northern Illinois can or does, but they're definitely worse defensively than Northern Illinois is. So I'm very intrigued by the matchup for sure. For a MAC game on a random Wednesday night, it's one I should definitely be following and may end up having some money on Toledo in the game.
That Ohio game, they actually scored the last 17 and wound up winning the game 45-28. But I think the point that you're making here is still strong. 25. Oh, really? Okay.
Huh. That's weird. Okay, so that's my bad. But I just pulled up their schedule and it says they lost the game 28-45, but it says they're 7-2, and so that would make sense that the L's wrong. But anyways, you're good. Go ahead.
But the point that you're making, though, here is that this was a Miami of Ohio team without Gus Raglan. And, you know, there's been some questions here the last couple of weeks for Miami games if they're going to have him, because he's obviously the better option. They outgained Ohio 448-443 in this game. Miami of Ohio had a couple of turnovers, but they moved the ball. They had 7 plays, 77-yard drive, 10 plays, 72-yard drive, 10 play, 95-yard drive. So Miami moved the football here on Ohio, and that has to be a concern for Frank Solich's team here, when you're taking on, as we talked about, a Toledo team that has so much explosiveness. So this is a really fascinating game to me. I like I said, my number was a little bit lower, so I understand the move. But I also look at this Ohio team and I say, okay, their offense has not played a defense as good as Toledo's, and their defense has not faced an offense anywhere close. So that's why I didn't play it, despite my numbers suggesting it. And now I see it coming down. And like you said, I mean, it is surprising to see Toledo getting steamed against week after week after week when there's really no reason for it to happen, because they don't turn the football over and they move the ball really well. This is a really good program. I mean, what Jason Candle has done taking over for Matt Campbell, Jason Candle might find himself a bigger Group of Five job, you know, that somebody else takes a Power Five job from.
It's one of those where you expect usually, like what's an example, like Western Kentucky losing Brom, like they fell off right away. This was not the case. I thought Toledo would maybe have a drop, but Candle's done fantastic, and sure enough, he's going to probably get a gig coaching a lower-level Power 5 team. I apologize to the listeners on that. I really, like, you just Google the schedule for the team. It's at 45-28 Ohio loss. So they did win, so they didn't give up 45 to them. That's better defensively. I will say this, though. They gave up 28 and got out gained, like you mentioned, Adam. The week prior, I mean, they only gave, you know, 14, I guess, to Buffalo. Kent State was like 17 or 14, but Bowling Green did score like 37. I'm talking about Miami-Ohio schedule. So it is weird that somehow Miami-Ohio still doubled their points that they had scored the last 2 weeks against Ohio.
It's going to be a fun game. What's the total? Do we have a total yet? I'm going to pull up the screen. The totals must have come out today, right? 65.
Total open.
That makes sense.
Yeah. It opened 61.5 at Bet Online and then went up to 65. So that's not really a huge surprise there. And Bet Online's kind of notorious for that, I think, where they kind of sometimes they estimate some totals a little bit too low on those high scoring games. And then I think obviously the limits are small, but they still have a little bit of exposure on those sides for sure.
Yeah, I was just gonna say it should be a fun game that's played in, you know, probably the 60s. And then I hadn't looked up my actual projection for the total on this one yet, but I think the move up to 65 is probably correct. So I'd be passing at this number on the total, but it's definitely worth looking at Toledo if it gets down to 3.
See, it's something else that's really interesting about this game, and these are, again, betting angles that you want to try to consider here as we go forward, is that Ohio 4-1 in the conference, Akron also 4-1 in the conference, and Ohio will already know what Akron did on Tuesday night against Miami of Ohio. That number is ballooned from 3.5 to 6, which will lead me to believe Gus Ragland's probably going to play for Miami here this week. But if Akron loses that game, Ohio has a cushion, plus Ohio plays Akron next week. So even if Ohio loses this game here against Toledo, ultimately it doesn't really mean anything for them because they're two games clear of Bowling Green. If they beat Akron next week, they have the head-to-head tiebreaker and the better conference record. So, again, factor all those into the equation as well, because this game is probably – a MAC conference championship preview. So, you know, these two teams should meet each other down the line here once again. All right, let's go to Friday night here. Let's talk about this Washington versus Stanford game. Washington's a 7-point road favorite against Stanford. Now, Stanford obviously hasn't been very impressive here over the last 3 weeks, but to be fair, they did play pretty well, at least defensively, against Washington State last week. The problem here for Stanford is that it's very clear that if Bryce Love is not at least 90% healthy, they have nothing on offense.
It was against Oregon State when he didn't play. Early in the game against Washington State, he broke a 50-yard run. But outside of that run, which is typical for him, I think it was something like 1 yard a carry or similar to that number, because he only ended up with 68 or 69 yards. So I'm confused as to why all of a sudden – because here's the thing. Usually Stanford, you can kind of plug in the running back and you're okay. And the drastic drop when he went out against Oregon State like blew my mind. So then he goes back in, and even playing a little injured, he wasn't as effective. So is Bryce Love really that good when he's healthy? And I mean, maybe the Stanford offensive line isn't creating as many holes as they have in the past for McCaffrey or any of their past good rushers. And really it's a Bryce Love thing, and so we'll have to just keep track of his health going into this Washington game. But I will say this. I was talking to someone who – lives up in the Northern California near the Bay Area in Palo Alto and talking with a lot of his friends and also some people that he knows that work with the team. And like this season,
has all been about UW. That's what they have talked about. They did not care that they lost to USC. They didn't even care about the San Diego State game. They want to beat Washington. This is, they got embarrassed last year as, I think, small favorites on the road. They lost by like 40 points. This season has been about beating Washington and everything leading up to this game. And so coming off of a loss against Washington State or not, I think you're going to get the absolute best Stanford performance. And I know it opened at 7.5 with the win, and that got bet down a little. There's still some sevens around, but it's down to 6.5 a few spots too. I do like the Stanford side. When it comes down to it, I'm curious what your actual power reading is for this one. I think it's a little bit too drastic of a move. I have it at, assuming Love is healthy, I have this like at 3. Maybe he's playing a little injured and he's been a big factor. You could argue it's 4, 4.5. So like getting a touchdown at home. I know Washington's been good, but I mean, who's Washington played that's very good? They lost on the road at Arizona State. This is the toughest team Washington's played yet. So, and they're on the road and laying 7. It just seems like Stanford's the right spot, and everything points their way on top of the fact that the number's just too high.
Yeah, I've got this number down in the 2 range, so my number is a lot lower than this one as well. Maybe I haven't adjusted well enough to Stanford and the way that they've looked here over the last 2 games. Also, Stanford's defense is nowhere near the Stanford defenses of the past. I mean, I think they're giving up – I just wrote about this game, actually. They're giving up like 4.7 yards per carry, and a few years ago they didn't even give up 4.7 yards per play. So this is a defense that has regressed by a pretty decent margin, but also – what's challenging for me is everyone talked about how KJ Costello was an upgrade to Keller Crist, and obviously, you know, over the long haul, he probably will be. Costello looked brutal last week. I think he only completed 9 of 20 or something like that. So I just wonder is there anybody that can play quarterback for this team? And if there's not, and Bryce Love is less than 100%, which he appears to be, I don't know how they score here, because Washington's defense, while they haven't played anybody, is extremely good. I mean, they're giving up fewer yards per play than Alabama this year.
Yeah, and part of it is that they haven't played anybody that can move it. But I will say I was surprised because KJ Costello played a few other games this season, and that was his worst game he'd played. He'd looked better in all of his other games in matchups. I was looking up real quick what the where Washington State's like pass defense ranks, and they're tied for 16th with LSU. So that's part of it. You don't usually think Washington State in defense. They're 16th against the pass, and they play in the Pac-12, which generally is pretty good offensively and airs it out a lot. So I credit some of it being that was the toughest defense they'd seen probably against the pass, and Washington will be now, but prior to this, and that's probably why KJ Costello didn't look as good. And it's interesting. That's why Washington State's a really good team, and I think they've kind of been undervalued all year. I've bet on them and against them in a few spots. I was finally wrong against Arizona on them, but – when you have a top 20 defense, but then you can also throw for 500 yards a game, like you're going to win and cover a lot of games. And their defense is just really strong. So I think you have to credit them for only holding Stanford to 21, basically just the one big play. And I think another touchdown was off of a turnover that set up a short field. So outside of those two plays, I mean, they basically played another 57 minutes of giving up 7 points to Stanford. It was really impressive.
Yeah, that stat that I was talking about here, Stanford's allowed 4.7 yards per carry this season. In 2014, they allowed 4.2 yards per play. So, this defense is going in the wrong direction. We'll probably see a defensive coordinator change, to be completely honest with you. So, we'll see, though. I mean, I think this number's a little bit high. And the crazy thing about it for me, too, is I have Washington, like, I think they're 5th or 6th in my power rating, something like that. And I mean, they're high, and yet this number is still too high. So, I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see if maybe I'm wrong on Stanford, if the market's right. But we'll have to see what happens there with that Friday night game. All right, let's go to Saturday here and touch on a few of these games. Let's go to game 129-130 here between Virginia Tech and Georgia Tech. Virginia Tech, 2.5, 3-point favorite out there, depending on where you look. A few places do still have this number off the board, but the ones that have it, Pinnacle's 2.5 extra juice, Bookmaker, BetOnline, 5 Dimes, all sitting on 3. Now, the reason I want to ask you about this game, I think, is pretty obvious here, Cheetah, in that for Virginia Tech, we talked about them last week. We talked about that game against Miami. Well, Miami's already won the Coastal Division. They're 6-0 in the Coastal. Virginia Tech can get to 6-2, but Miami has the tiebreaker with that head-to-head win. So, at this point, the goals for Virginia Tech have changed. That's kind of going to be the theme of the Saturday games that we look at here. So I know Justin Fuente is a good head coach, but that has to be a little bit of a downer for this team, no?
Oh, yeah, it totally is. At best, what are they playing for? Probably not even like a New Year's Six Bowl. Probably like a Peach Bowl type. I'm not even sure what like the next tier would be. It's tough, and that was their game, and they just completely got beat down. And I'll say this, when you're looking at, we're talking about bowl games and this and that and motivation, Georgia Tech's 4-4. They just lost to Virginia. They have three chances now to win two games. Granted, they had a game canceled earlier this year, so they're one of those 11-game schedules that maybe at 5-6 they get a bowl opportunity. But this is it. It's Virginia Tech. They're going to lose to Georgia. I'll just say that now. I don't care. It would take a miracle. Now they probably will beat them somehow because I'm just jinxing it. But it's Virginia Tech and Duke. They have to win both of these to get 6 wins. So you're looking at that where it's the spot. It screams Georgia Tech, really. And you know, how much does Virginia Tech, like you said, on top of the fact of them really caring and their plans for a potential season, playing back in the AAC title game again against Clemson or whoever it may be, those are gone. And it comes down to this. When normally you're maybe flat prepping for the falling opponent, and now you have to prep for the option where a lot of the team and personnel haven't maybe seen it yet. And they haven't this year, from what I recall. And there's some guys that have probably seen it that are playing as juniors and seniors, have seen it before. But I mean, how much do they really care about prepping for a Georgia Tech option that's been really, really good? Who knows? I think the spot definitely favors Georgia Tech here. I'm looking real quick what my number is that I can – in tell you in a second, I think the number's a little low, which is probably why it won't be. I think it's accounted for in the current line at 3. Actually, no, my number's 4, so it's not crazy low. It's maybe a point, but I think it's pretty fair price anyway, on top of the fact that you're getting a pretty good spot, I guess, with Georgia Tech.
Yeah, I have this one 4.5, so I'm pretty much right there with you, and I do need to correct myself here. Miami hasn't locked up the Coastal yet, but Virginia needs to win at Louisville, at Miami, and then beat Virginia Tech in the rivalry game in order to knock Miami off of the perch. So for all intents and purposes, Miami pretty much has locked up the Coastal here, excuse me, and a spot probably against Clemson in the ACC title game. But there's another game that follows a similar mold, but it's on a much broader scale. Michigan State and Ohio State here, game 143-144 on the board. Ohio State favored by 14.5 or 15. This number opened 17 at Bookmaker. Now, Ohio State hasn't beaten Michigan State by more than 15 points in Columbus in like 40 years. So a lot of people were already thinking that this number came out high, and it certainly seems like that is the case. My number was 16.5, though, so it came out right around mine. But obviously here for Ohio State, I mean, losing that game last week, not just losing it, but in the fashion that they did to knock themselves out of the college football playoff. And I guess credit to Iowa. I mean, they came out and scored 55. They deserve the credit for that. But Ohio State, with that comeback over Penn State, controlled its own destiny, and now they don't. Now they need a bunch of crazy things to happen to find a way to work their way back into this as a 2-loss team. I just don't know how they get off the deck here against a team that historically they struggle against anyway.
Yeah, Michigan State. And I don't know why people don't think they're good. I had this hunch everyone was going to bet Penn State, and was kind of right. So I waited all week, and we bet Michigan State just Saturday morning at plus 10. I liked them to win the game outright. They've played such a tough schedule, and their losses are to Notre Dame, who's pretty good now, by the way, and they outgained them in that game. Their other one's a triple overtime road loss at Northwestern. Penn State was in a really bad spot. Ohio State's in a pretty bad spot again here, and I'll say my number's 14.5, just like my raw power rated number. So I'm not surprised they came down from 17 either. But this is my question to throw back at you, if you have any opinion, kind of being more familiar with Ohio State and stuff. Their aspirations as of a week ago were national title. Now, Michigan State can still win this conference and win this division. They're actually tied with Ohio State for first. They win this game, they'll be a big favorite because they'll have tiebreakers against Ohio State and Penn State, who are the two loss teams. I mean, how much does Ohio State care about winning the division and the Big Ten, knowing that a 2-loss, Big Ten title doesn't even get them into the playoff? When where they've been, most of the years since Urban Meyer's been there, it's a really tough spot to think about backing Ohio State. And it feels like kind of the old JT Barrett's back, where he had this run where he wasn't throwing interceptions. And when just a couple plays, Iowa makes and puts some pressure on the Ohio State offense, and it's back to JT Barrett just not being able to really throw the ball and make enough plays to
to get a win. Honestly, he just kept compounding it. I think he ended up throwing four interceptions or something. So I don't know if you have an opinion about really the Ohio State angle either, because for me, it would just be backing the dog or nothing. You know, now that it's come down some, it's probably a pass for me. But it wouldn't surprise me at all if Michigan State, you know, won the game outright either. It's just one of those spots where you could see Ohio State just being completely flat and kind of, you know, care less about the rest of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get that angle. I have a hard time with this game. I would not touch Ohio State under any circumstances. One thing I will say, though, is that when you look at the last couple of teams that the Buckeyes had, and they had all that NFL talent. They had multiple first-round draft picks, basically on both sides of the ball. This year, they don't. So they don't have as many players that have an eye towards the next level. So I think in that respect, in terms of wanting to win the Big Ten, wanting to go to the Rose Bowl, there's probably some element of that there. And, of course, you know they're going to be up for that game against that team up north when it comes to Thanksgiving weekend. So I think there's still motivations in that regard, and I think they'd love to end Wisconsin's perfect season. I think they'd have a great time trying to go out there and do that in Indianapolis. So I think there's still a certain level of motivation. The problem is this team is so flawed on both sides of the ball. You know, Barrett has not looked good at several, you know, points throughout the year. The defense just gave up 55, and they had all kinds of problems against Oklahoma. They had some issues in the first half against Penn State. This isn't the same dominant Ohio State team from a talent and personnel standpoint, but I think that there's probably more guys that are invested in the outcome of this season than they've had in past years. So maybe there's a little bit of give and take there, but there's no way in hell I'd touch them here laying more than two touchdowns, that's for sure.
Yeah, those are my sentiments as well. I just wanted to see if you had any extra thoughts, because for me, it's one of those similar, like you're trying to guess which way a coaching firing or rumors could go. It just feels like one we should just not try to guess and just pass, you know, wait for a better day. And it's another one where live, if Sparty scores first, you know, the live line, especially if they close around 14-point dogs, I mean, they're still going to be getting like over a touchdown live. That might be a good time to just be like, okay, you know, Ohio State, this is going to be a very similar game maybe to last week, or at least Sparty keeps things close anyway the way they play. You know, grab Michigan State plus 7.5 or plus 9.5, whatever it is, kind of in that range there live. Just kind of a note that I'm going to make here as we're talking through this game, because it does feel like we're going to get a sense of what Ohio State really cares about right away in that game.
No, absolutely. And like I said, Ohio State just historically has trouble with Michigan State. It's a game that's always too close for comfort, no matter what both teams look like coming into it. So you'll have to see how that one plays out. I know you've got a little bit of a time crunch here, so I do want to touch on one more game, and that's the game between Georgia and Auburn. I think this was a tough one to line. I think this one's a tough one to gauge, because Georgia's been very, very good. Auburn's quietly been very good. They don't have the pomp and circumstance of Georgia or Alabama or some of the other teams that have been out there in the national landscape. This is still a really good football team. Georgia's favored by 2.5 or 3, depending on where you look out there. How are you breaking this one down, Preston?
Yeah, you know, this is one going into the year that I had kind of consciously overlooked, because I didn't know how good Georgia was really going to be. And a few weeks in, I think it was evident that Georgia was really, really good. But I was always hoping that Auburn could lose to Clemson and then they'd still be okay. I liked them against LSU on the road, which they ended up blowing that game anyway. But it felt like they could lose a game and then still have Alabama at home end of the year. They get Georgia at home. It just felt like a great spot for them to potentially win the SEC division. And if they lose this, they won't. Now, if they do win this game and they beat Alabama, they're going to go to the SEC title game, potentially win that if they get a rematch against Georgia. This is just kind of a side note from breaking down the game for a second, but I don't know how you don't put a two-loss SEC champ that has two wins over number one Georgia and a win over number two Alabama and your road losses against Clemson, who I think is going to be 3 or 4 this week, and then a road LSU loss. Auburn's probably going to get in if they win out, which is what's interesting about all this when it's come down to it. But my number is only one. And I know, and I've been pretty big on Georgia. Like I said, a couple weeks in, I didn't get why they were only laying 2 at home to Mississippi State. Like, everyone would laugh at that line now, you know, it's 5 or 6 weeks later. I like Auburn a lot. I'll say this, last week, I think I was doing my podcast, U Breakdown, for this game against Texas A&M. And I had no reason to really like Auburn minus 15 or 15.5. But it just felt like one of those where, I mean, if you were going to get an idea of where Auburn's mindset was, because A&M's really good. I mean, they lost to Bama by, it ended up being an 8 or a 12-point difference at the end of the game. They held Alabama to 24. Been a really, really strong kind of, you know, and Starkel came back too. They had their starting quarterback returning. He was the one who got injured against UCLA when that went to hell in that second half. But I thought you were going to get where Auburn's really at in that A&M game, and how they were going to kind of bounce back from the few weeks prior and that, you know, absolute choke at LSU. And I think you got the team that we expect. Like, Auburn's really good, and I thought you put it a good way. They're kind of quietly really, really good. But when they ended up crushing A&M, and I think A&M actually ended up landing 15 because they scored the last 10. But Auburn dominated the game just about the entire way, or at least from the middle of the first to the middle of the fourth. And I think that was very positive in the sense that they know they can win out and, or at least, you know, put an effort into these games, and they're going to have a chance at the national championship. And if not, at the very least, they could win an SEC championship game. And now you're getting the number one team in the country going to your place, which no one was anticipating as being that big of a matchup going. And it's really the first real pressure now Georgia's felt since Notre Dame. And in that one, they kind of felt like they were playing with house money as underdogs in a non-conference game with Fromm's first start at quarterback. Well, now there's some pressure on them. I like the Auburn side, especially if it gets to a three or higher, because my number's one. So I know I talked too long. Actually, like you said, I'm a little crunched, and I'm sorry I had to cut it short this week, and we had to cut out one of the games. But I really do like the Auburn side. I think it's them or nothing, but it's come up from two to two and a half, three. And I think let's be patient. Everyone likes Georgia. No one's really looking at Auburn anymore, and I think it's a good time to actually buy them.
No, I agree. I mean, my number's pick on this game, so I do think there's a little bit of value in Auburn. And one other thing on Georgia here real quickly is that, you know, I mean, look, they beat Notre Dame on the road in Fromm's first start. That was awesome. That looks like a really significant win right now. But the Mississippi State game, they won 31-3, but Mississippi State was in about the worst possible spot off that huge road win against LSU. What is Georgia's body of work? I mean, there's just not much there, and they haven't played anybody since that Mississippi State game. So I think that that's pretty much a good point to wrap up on here. And I do have one more listener question. If you want, you can answer this to me via DM so I can pass it along to him. But real quickly, Georgia and Bama. Bama minus six in the look-ahead line for the SEC title game. What do you think about that number?
Oh, yeah. I remember reading that earlier before we hit record. He wants to play Bama minus six. I'll say this. The thought process that the result of Georgia-Auburn would change – drastically the look-ahead number for the SEC championship game isn't necessarily correct. I would, unless there's an injury, right? If there's a personnel thing, but one game, one sample isn't generally going to change a market perception heavily enough that it should matter. And if it does, then usually it's incorrectly in too much of an overreaction. So I would say if he likes Bama minus six anyways, then yeah, bet it now if you want. But I wouldn't worry that you're not going to get a similar number, you know, in the championship game, assuming Georgia does lose to Auburn by chance on Saturday. So I wouldn't sweat it too much, but I think, yeah, one game samples, they're not going to normally, you know, factor into a look-ahead line unless there's a big injury, say Fromm got injured or something, or Chubb, and, you know, that might end up making a difference. But if it plays out fine, they end up losing a close game to Auburn on the road, that doesn't mean all of a sudden Bama's going to be minus eight, you know, minus six, you know, maybe six and a half, but I even would doubt that it moved much at all.
Cheetah, thank you so much, man. Apologize to your wife for me, and we'll talk to you again later in the week for the Super Contest.
No problem. I appreciate it. You guys take it easy.
Good stuff there on this week's Hunting for Winners segments from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com and also PodcastU.Vegas. And you can get his picks over there at Wager Talk, and then also you can pay for the subscriptions for PodcastU. And I imagine something that you can reach out to him on Twitter at Sports Cheeto about. I imagine that, you know, he'll probably have some college basketball stuff rolling out on PodcastU here as well, whether it's some conference breakdowns or team breakdowns or something like that. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two guests will join us. The first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds, and the number one on Twitter. We'll chat a bunch more college football, some more Maction, a little bit of NFL, NBA, all kinds of stuff coming your way on Wednesday's show. Thursday, Brad Powers and Ralph Michaels will join us. Brad Powers, of course, from BradPowersSports.com. Ralph Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment with myself and Sports Cheetah. Then also Brent from DSI with this week's version of the Odds Report. If you ever have any questions for the show, any questions for our guests, please feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Skating Tripods. I always ask if you have a question for a guest, and I will pretty much answer everybody that reaches out to me. So If there's ever something you want to know here on the show, never hesitate to ask. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.